Okay, so namaste and welcome back to this third and final part. So we'll start with the first one. Hi Helen, just an update from last week's homework regarding self-hatred and a list you suggest I do about all the things I don't like about this body-mind. Most of it was to do with my appearance and even my accent, so I couldn't find any positives. But I looked at causality instead. I could see that my hatred was projected onto the body. Good. If the body looked better, I could be accepted or be worthy. I totally understand that the cause is the belief in non-acceptance and unworthiness, not the body. I'm questioning, is it really true that I need to be accepted? Very great, good. This seems to lead to another question. What needs to be accepted? Then I got confused, although I started to see that the silence does not need acceptance. I feel I've missed something though. Don't know if I'm making sense, but can you help please? Thank you. So if you can, the list that I was suggesting is about the traits, the behavioral patterns, the issues in your psyche really, rather than the body. But it's good that you, even if you did it with the body, you see that something is rejecting the appearance, isn't it? Something is saying this isn't how it should be. This isn't what should be. So looking at causality instead, the hatred is projected onto the body. I'd say that it's reflecting on the body. So if I hate myself, it may reflect as hating my body. If I don't think I am how I should be, then I will think my body isn't how it should be. If I think that who I am is shameful, my body may appear shameful to me. There's a reflection there in that. Maybe that's a subtle thing that you were feeling that you missed, that what needs to be accepted? That's good, because you see, as you said here, the silence doesn't need acceptance, does it? And it's not looking for anything in that way at all. It's already complete and whole. And then there's also this other aspect to us, this old egoic self that does need acceptance, feels that it needs acceptance. How do we gently dissolve those patterns? It's by looking and asking that question, is it really true we need acceptance? And that question has led you to this seeing, well, some part of me, it's already not true. The silence in its unmanifest form doesn't need anything, even acceptance. In its manifest form, it has believed it needed acceptance as a separate being, as someone. So the acceptance that we're looking for is self-acceptance, isn't it? When I love and accept myself as I am right now, then I begin to feel acceptance from others anyway. They have to mirror that back to me. When I respect myself as I am right now, other beings and my body will have to reflect that back to me. And even some things will change about your body from this seeing, as it reflects differently, but other things you will just fall absolutely in love with. It's a wonderful thing as a human being to be able to love your body as it is right now, recognizing that it is reflecting back to you what you think about yourself, about others, about the world. And as you begin to question this need for acceptance, that there is already the acceptance that you really want is not from others, it's about the self. You've always got that very easily and quickly when we've spoken, that sense that what I'm really looking for is from inside rather than from others, from outside. You've said that here as well. The confusion is because you're trying to pick one or the other. Confusion is there's some part of you that doesn't need acceptance, and there's some part of you that does, and you're trying to pick one. You know, so can you live with that paradox for a little while and question, do I need acceptance really? Recognizing that question is dissolving egoic tendencies. I've seen I'm not the ego. I've seen I'm the noumenon. But ego is still arising as ego and need for acceptance. So I can question until it stopped arising that way. So I hope that helps to really kind of grasp the The confusion was probably because you're trying to pick one or the other. You're getting two answers to that question and both seem contradictory, don't they? That's the nature of the paradox, you know. I am this unlimited being that doesn't need anything at all. I'm also this human being that seems to need and want things, and that's fine. But I'm going to allow my humanity to reflect my knowing that I don't need anything. As the silence, I don't need anything, least of all acceptance. And that reflects self-acceptance, self-acceptance. I am exactly how I'm supposed to be, and I couldn't be otherwise. That's like saying reality isn't how it's supposed to be. It's the exact same thing as saying reality isn't how it's supposed to be. So hopefully that's helped to kind of point the direction. We are not the ego. We are not that which needs acceptance, but we can embrace that and love it more and allow these tendencies to dissolve by questioning them. Do I really need this? When we question, we no longer have to experience the noumenon contracting itself down into someone that needs something and how that feels in our experience. Lovely. Again, if you need more help with that, please do ask again. So next, this week, as I have been contemplating, why am I so sure that cause and effect are different or two? In regards to money and concentration and inspiration to get work tasks done. It was until this morning that I had the knowing that all is the same and inclusive of that I like and don't like, want and don't want. All began with the question, and little by little, as answers came, I was being drawn into this diffusion of everything, and many questions came and answers, and then becoming the endless space, no shape, no corners, no anything. Even as I'm writing now about this, hours later, the emptiness and spaciousness come profoundly with a deep silence that I am that I am. So as soon as I begin to question this assumption that cause and effect are two, just that questioning of it, even if I don't really understand why I'm questioning, it begins to work. It begins to reveal that space in which there's only one, and the realization that it must be one. They must be the same. The reflection cannot appear without the thing that's being reflected. And therefore, the outer reflection of our experiences, what we're experiencing, cannot appear without the belief. When the belief is let go of, the reflection immediately has to change. This Saturday class and Monday satsang had complemented so well that I have been contemplating in being open, curious, willing, and inclusive of all the ways that the self appears and does not appear. It seemed that I was missing the inclusiveness of all, thus not being in conflict with anything. Thanks, Helen. So it's really good. The inclusiveness is going to include everything, isn't it? And it's only when we choose one thing, which is the essence of the way that I teach contemplation, it's an open inclusion of all of the answers, phenomenal thoughts, emotions, experiences, feelings, all of that. And even the non-phenomenal answer, which is the noumenon, the silence. So the moment we're open and inclusive, just like right now, I'm aware of all these objects in the room. I'm not trying to desperately decide which one is the most real, am I? Because I'm just aware. I'm not dividing myself. I'm not struggling. So where I divide myself without realizing is when some fear comes up or some unworthiness, for example, or anger, and I zero in on that thing. I zoom right in into that thing. And I've lost my inclusive perspective temporarily. And I can just zoom back out and notice peace. Fear and peace, or unworthiness and love, or anger and joy, or sometimes all of those. And even in the darkest moments, despair, despondency, apathy, self-hatred, there can also be love, there can also be joy, peace, bliss even. And as we were talking about with Ramana's example, even in intense bodily pain, there can be joy, bliss, even at the moment of leaving the body, an excitement and a gratitude for all that the body has given us and that it's now allowed to finally rest. That's the extreme example, obviously, but the inclusiveness is the key, as you said. Where I seem to have issues is where I do not find like a step-by-step guide to check in the self, although I know we have them, lesson one, and move on from there. Or if it's a sense that boredom that says, I know I've done it many times, but now I do not feel like doing it. It's the same with the statement process. It is as if I've lost interest in my awakening. After these intensive 8 months of practice and deepening, any feedback is welcome and appreciated. Thanks again, Helen. Namaste. So there's probably two things occurring here. The first is that you're starting to really rise above these beliefs. So there'll be a lessening of the intensity of concentration on them. Just like a bird, when it takes off, it has to flap its wings really quickly. A lot of intense activity to get off the ground and escape the gravity of the earth. And as it begins to climb higher, it can flap its wings less. And we have to kind of flap our wings really hard, don't we, to kind of, there's an intensity of focus and effort to kind of transcend the gravitational pull of these beliefs, because they do pull you into them if we don't question them. So there's probably that and a little resistance as well. So there's a lessening of effort, just like a plane will take off. Eventually it begins to level out as it gets to a certain altitude. And that's happening naturally as you're transcending more and more of this stuff. It's just becoming a habit. It's just a natural way of being to question these things rather than something I have to really focus on. The boredom is a very subtle form of resistance, as you've seen, perhaps suggests from what you've written that you've seen. This feeling that I've done it now, I don't need to. Again, it's mind's way of looking for a particular answer, that there's one answer, there's one outcome to all of this, and that everything else is that you've done now, you've seen it, you know. So in that openness, that curiosity, that will combat this tendency to want to be finished. If there's anything to be finished with, it is excluding things, you know. So when I stop excluding anything, I'll not want to discontinue my, you know, spiritual practice. It's really just a shift of motivations. It's rather feeling a little bit lost is because the intensity of the work is not being driven by suffering anymore. Less and less is it being driven by suffering. And more it's just a natural way the self is now, isn't it? So it may feel a bit weird because there's not this intense drive that's beginning to melt away. You know, when the rocket ship takes off, it uses all this fuel, doesn't it? Burns all this fuel. And then eventually that bit of the rocket breaks away. And most of the fuel for any flight like that into space is used in that initial takeoff. Same here. You're beginning to reach cruising altitude where you can not necessarily yet put the cruise control on, but you're starting to level out, aren't you? At the same time, there's something just kind of trying to use that a little bit to kind of sneak back in. So just to be aware of both of those things going on there, you'll be able to see. The thing that people say over and over again is that they don't feel they're doing enough work. But that's really a sign. It can be, you know, spiritual work. I mean, it can be a sign or a symptom that they're not doing enough. But if someone says it in the graduate program, it's usually that they're not recognizing how much work they've already done and the fruits of that happening. And that naturally we can ease off the gas pedal a little bit now. That doesn't mean that the work's going to stop. It's just going on habitually. It's more of a habit to include, to inquire, to open, to be curious, to question, than it is to assume, to believe, to contract, and to reject. Lovely. I hope that helps. But again, if you need more with that, just do ask. Next one. I was so thankful for the extra satsang today, as it was very helpful, and I'm still working through it hours later. The partner respect angry question really resonated with me, as my partner and I have been going through a rough time for over a year now. I get how there is no cause, or that the cause is in my mind, but I still struggle with, but what if we would really be better off separating or divorcing even? How would I know? Or do I just keep coming to the realization that my seemingly cause and effects are illusions and our relationship will get better? What if it doesn't? I'm fine sharing this with the group as well as who I am. Well, I'll leave that up to you if you want to do that in the sanghas or whatever, but it may be that this relationship is destined to come to an end, or it may be that it's destined to get better. But the only way that you can know that is to work through the cause and effect, in terms of what do you think you want from this person? What do you feel you need? What you're trying to get from them? And when you've released those, you know, so sometimes it's security, respect, as you mentioned here, approval, all of that. Sometimes we need that love, even, you know, in a relationship like this. As I stop trying to get those things from this being and I'm allowing them to come from me, then it'll become naturally, spontaneously clear whether we're supposed to be together or not. In fact, in truth, you don't even really know whether you're having problems in this relationship right now. I know that may seem a challenging thing for me to say. What you're actually having problems with right now is the old way that you're functioning inside this relationship. It's transitioning from a relationship where two beings come together to try to make each other feel better and safer. It's the usual way that human beings experience themselves in a relationship, to this switching over of coming to the relationship from fullness, from clarity, from wisdom, from wholeness, from peace, from love, from joy, as your awakening deepens. So do you even really know if you're having problems, or are you having a problem with the way that you're interacting in your relationship? How that seems to play out is we grow distant. There's some distance between us emotionally, maybe physically, mentally, spiritually. There's less connection between us. But as you begin to see, I don't really need anything from this being at all, and I want to see what it's like to come to this relationship from my fullness. What is it like to be with this person when I don't need anything from them at all? I don't even need them to stay with me, because I feel just as peaceful either way. And then I won't be deluding myself. It'll be utterly clear if I'm supposed to be with them or if not. Either way will feel the same. It'll feel joyful. It's possible for two human beings to come to the understanding together. We've gone as far as we can together. We've given each other as much as we can. We've learned as much as we can together. It's now time to go our separate ways. We can thank each other and appreciate each other for that and wish each other well for the future. That's not the common experience in human beings, is it? Because what we're experiencing more often is, you didn't give me what I need, therefore I'm angry with you and I'm going to try to find it somewhere else. I'm not saying this is what you're doing. I'm kind of painting the picture from both ends of the spectrum, just to make it clearer. So as you begin to switch over and you're not experiencing in this relationship from needing things from them, then you actually finally really do know. You'll be utterly clear. This is the person I'm supposed to be with for the rest of my life, or at least right now. That's utterly clear. Or we really have very little in common when I'm not trying to get something from them. And it'd be a mutual thing then. It'd leave both of you feeling empowered. If there is to be a split or a divorce, it'd leave both of you feeling empowered. And there'd be gratitude for each other and as far as you've come together and the journey that you've shared together. And a loving embrace of whatever future that other being has. It's a very different way of being in a relationship, isn't it? So I'd suggest not forming any conclusions, although we naturally feel our relationship is in trouble. What's in trouble is the way that you've functioned in this relationship is no longer enough for you. You want to come to this relationship now as the self, from your fullness, and you want to experience what that's like. So You've mentioned respect. Look at what else you feel you need from this person. Then really question, is it true that I need that? It could be a tangible thing, like they bring money into the household. They could be intangible, like security, approval, love. And when you don't need those things, and when you've questioned the beliefs, when you're coming from your fullness and you're so full that you're overflowing, there's a different dimension of a relationship that's possible, where there's just a sharing of being. And it's not this push-pull thing that goes on between most human beings. What we call relationship in most human beings is really ego battles between you give me this and I'll give you that. And nobody can give you what they don't feel they have themselves. They do have it, of course, but they don't think they do. Therefore, they're experiencing it being missing. Nobody can give us respect when we don't feel we have it. We can't give it to anyone if we don't feel we have it. When it's pouring out of you in more than enoughness, abundance, then people enjoy being around that because they feel fulfilled in it. And either way, stay or go, it will feel equally joyful. So I hope that gives you some encouragement and some way forward with this. Again, very brave sharing. Last but not least, hi Helen, I started to comment before, but for some reason it disappeared mid-typing. If this was in fact submitted by mistake, please ignore this first effort, if that makes sense. It quite often happens, something disappears, right? Wonderful technology. My seeing around this issue has been a struggle, but I can at least now see that, like the free will conundrum, cause and effect only take place at the level of mind and not self. So I can see that to be engaging in my old stories and grievances is a sure sign I'm perceiving from ego level of consciousness. Wonderful. So that's a breakthrough, isn't it, in itself? And again, I just caution against this. There's some point I'm going to get causality. I'm going to understand cause and effect and I'll be done with it. Maybe you're going to be understanding this clearer and clearer every day for the rest of your life, just like you're understanding clearer and clearer you really are, and living as that more and more. And it can be a beautiful embracing of an unfolding of revelation rather than a trying to get it, trying to understand. And of course, you're right that it is only happening on a level of mind, because there really aren't two things such as cause and effect. There really isn't duality, although this seems to be. But boy, oh boy, am I like a dog with bone with some subjects, and the world at the moment seems almost perfectly arranged to pull me into my usual narratives about goodies, baddies, and great deceptions. The big issue for me is around the possibility that global awakening can be stopped, that humanity is being manipulated into divisive thinking and fear that can even move to inoculate everyone. The move to inoculate everyone is a plot. Please help me with this. All of our ideas about how the world is, what's happening in the world, has come from a source, social media, the media, the news, and there may be an agenda in that social media and in the news. I'm not saying there is. We're either being misled on purpose or accidentally. If you just take the news in the evening, basically, as an example, and separate what is fact from someone's opinion, you get a very different view of the news. What actually happened, rather than what somebody thought about it or commented on it. But again, the media is focused on a very small subsection of society. And the self is, to realize the self, you are automatically outside of being controlled by anyone or anything. Even to realize I am those that are trying to control out of fear, that are trying to manipulate out of fear. I am that too. That is another appearance in me. And I cannot be at the effect of it. If I believe myself to be a separate being, I believe that there's everything outside of me that I can't control. global awakening cannot be stopped because it's like a flower unfolding. The flower, it's already the flower. The self is already the self. Each and every human being is already the self. And it's blossoming now into its fullness. It's beginning to really blossom into its fullness. If you do your research based on what you read, what you hear is happening in the world, you have to come to understand that that is ignoring 99% of what is going on in the world. I touched about on this earlier. The focus of the media is always on what's going wrong in the world. And it gives a very narrow, limited perspective. Why isn't the nightly news, group of graduate program members broke through illusion into clarity? Person has massive revelation. Person heals themselves spontaneously of cancer. Person comes into abundance after years of trying. A woman finds her soulmate after years of searching. Cat rescued from tree, you know, all of that. Can you see the focus is a very negative thing, and we take that as fact. This is how the world is. I'm taking a very small section of what's going on. We believe this is how the entire world is. And I'm not saying that watching the news is bad or wrong or dangerous or anything like that, but watch it with an informed opinion that this may not be the full truth of what is. We all as human beings love to confuse our opinions with fact, and there's no greater place for that to occur than social media and all the places we take our information from. Even if a mass inoculation was sent out to control people, even if that's what's, you know, even if the conspiracy theorists are right, that same inoculation happening to an awakened being would have no effect, no negative effect, I should say. Just like Dr. David Hawkins did a lot of muscle testing about the effects of things that are generally considered harmful on an awakened being, fluorescent lighting, chemtrails, pesticides, over a certain level of consciousness, nothing affected the body because the person had realized the real cause is their belief. If I believe this thing can harm me, this inoculation, if I believe this outside influence can harm me, this organization, this government, this whatever, then I'm going to have to experience being harmed some way. And it's the essence of being a separate being. It's the essence of being isolated and alone and at the effect of the rest of the world. You can live in a very different world than the person sitting right next to you. You have the same inoculation, eat the same food, do the same thing, have a very different response. And experience it completely differently. Your body reflects what you know to be true. If you know you are utterly safe, it's very hard for an awakened being to have an accident or to, you know, do anything like that, because accidents aren't really accidents. They're manifestations of beliefs. And so you have to really begin to consider what it means to be the self. Not only are you waking up to seeing that, but it also begins to reflect as your individual body mind's experience. You begin to prosper where others are struggling and suffering. And you begin to experience being safe in a very physical way too. The effect that anything has upon the body or on the mind, programming, whether it's from social media or other places, conditioning given to us, things ingested physically in our food, all of that, there's nothing that can affect us that way by itself. Only with our agreement, our imagination that I am not safe, I can be harmed. Even, you know, and this goes right across the board. I could spend more time talking about this, but hopefully that helps to alleviate that fear. to begin to recognize these attitudes are coming up inside you now to be examined. And it's not a bad thing that all this is coming up, is it? It's good to question this, and that we're not just a puppet at the effect of some fearful, powerful, elitist group or something. You know, if you read all the conspiracy theories, you'd be frightened to death. But you have to come to recognize that you are outside of their control already. Already. Nobody has ever harmed another being. Only our own beliefs harm ourselves, because they reflect as our experience. So hopefully you can kind of spend some time contemplating that and really look at that. It's the dog with the bone is good, because now you're starting to intuitively feel that you can resolve these, you can come out of them. It used to terrify me, the effect of thinking that there were all these nefarious entities out there that wished me harm or that wanted to control me. It made me feel very small and unsafe. But it's really not like that anymore. And this is what's happening for you now. It's coming up so that you can re-examine them in the light of what you've seen. There is no such thing for the self. It doesn't exist. Now, it's not because the self is doing the ostrich thing, head in the sand. It's literally that you can be the one person in a crowd of many that has a very different experience, because your body mind is vibrating on a much higher level. And all these things that wish you harm bounce off that auric field of the awakened being and are actually even transformed. So even someone that wants to do you harm, when they come into your presence, they'll find it very hard. They might start laughing. They might feel a change, or they'll just be repelled and they'll move away from you. It's like walking around inside a bubble of safety. So safe that we don't even realize it's already reflecting in the mind and body. I mean, despite someone's best intentions, probably you're waking up anyway. You're in a graduate program anyway. You're breaking free of illusion. You're coming to see the truth. So whatever they're trying to do anyway isn't working, is it? Here we all are waking up anyway. So I hope that gives you some direction to go forward with. On a positive note, I'm beginning to see that my job is to constantly keep my awareness on self, stillness, silence, and to drag my mind back there every time I discover that the thinking takes over. This is the greatest challenge for me, but I know I've found the very best teacher to help. Thank you. So the teacher's there to support and just to remind, because we all remember that we had the same job, the same work to do. And you're going to forget, you're going to let your attention go in mind every now and again. It's fine, it doesn't matter. It's just what happened. And you've got all these graduate program members and sanghas to help encourage you too, as well as me. And we're all in this together, aren't we? We are our own little family that's ever growing, and it's wonderful. We can support each other. And I will absolutely walk with you to the end of the ability to imagine and beyond. But you'll never be alone. There's so much help. And I'd like you to remember that this, like anything else, you know, attention wandering to thoughts, etc., is just a habit. Any habit can be overcome with consistency. And this one's easier to overcome than any other habit when you realize, because it feels nice. It feels so nice to put attention back on what's real. So thank you very much. Lots of wonderful homework came in this time. I would encourage you to keep up your study and to not believe that you can fail at anything. You have to recognize and understand how amazing you are, that you're doing this, that you're breaking through. That's how I see you, all of you. And I'd like you to start to see yourself. You might already be the Buddha and have not noticed. Thank you. Namaste.